Last time we kind of went around Robin Hood's barn on, I don't know when Robin Hood got a barn, but on verse 5 of Romans 10, where Paul says that Moses writes, they translate it describeth, but it's actually he writes in this manner about the righteousness which is of the law. The man who does the things written in it shall live by those things that he does. That's the divine principle of law. And in regard to the righteousness which is of the law, the basic declaration is very simple. Do this and live. Don't, and you'll die. That's just the way the law was written. And in that statement, there is the final objective, living. That's the objective. The man who does these things shall live by them. Living is the goal. But also, that statement identifies the methodology that the Jews had decided to pursue, and that was the method of obedience. If you obey the law, life is the natural outworking of it. And that's what Moses wrote. On the surface of it, it's a very simple principle. Behave, and life will be yours. But that's the superficial level, because at the core of it, it's impossible. According to Romans chapter 7, verse 7 and 8, the Apostle Paul wrote that the law was given to make sin visible and known, and he said, when he ran across that command, thou shalt not covet, that sin came alive in him and created all kinds of coveting. So that's the problem with the law. It tells you what will bring you to life, but it doesn't empower you to get there. In fact, it's actually used by the sin principle within us to destroy it. So, when Moses described the righteousness which is in the law as a performance-based issue, it's no wonder that he said in verse 4 of chapter 10 that Christ was the end of the law for righteousness for everyone who believes. So there's a whole different approach. And tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to be looking at verses 6, 7, and 8. I don't know if we'll cover all of that, but they're locked in together, and there's very little way to get away from the stuff that's in each verse in order to understand what's going on. I probably will zero in on the first half of verse 6 tonight, because I really don't think we can get through verse 7 and 8 also without cobbling up our minds and making it almost impossible to remember anything we've looked at. So this evening we're going to be looking at the alternative to the righteousness which is of the law, and that's the righteousness which is of faith. Now the interesting thing about this statement, in verse 5, he says, for Moses writes, that the righteousness, or rights, and then he has this kind of a quote here, the righteousness which is out of the law is this, the man doing shall live by them. But the out of faith righteousness, and I put this up here because this is the order, the out of faith righteousness. So he's actually talking about the righteousness which is of faith, but his emphasis is that it's the out-of-faith righteousness. And that's important for us to keep in mind, because that's what he's really dealing with. In this text, he is going to be dealing with this issue of the righteousness which accrues to the person who believes. That's what verse 4 said, that Christ was the end of the law to the person who believes for righteousness. In other words, if the goal is righteousness, which the goal for righteousness is life, the end of that entire process is Jesus for the person who believes. But for the person who is establishing his own, then everything that's written in the law must be done. So, when we talk about the righteousness, the out-of-faith righteousness, he says it speaks on this wise, or it says thus. And then he quotes from Deuteronomy, say not in your heart. And then he quotes another passage, who shall ascend into heaven? And when we look at that, you're going to be really surprised if you haven't already looked at it. Because Paul says, who shall ascend into heaven? That is, to bring Christ down from above. Or, and he quotes Moses again, who shall descend into the abyss or the deep? And in this case, in Deuteronomy, it was the sea. And he says that is to bring up Christ again from the dead. So Paul has these interpretive issues here. They're not found in Moses at all. That's one of the reasons I really don't even want to go there tonight, because it's kind of complicated. I would like to zero in this evening on this matter of the righteousness of faith and its message. When it says it speaks on this wise, what he's talking about is faith's message. The law's message was, do this and live. Very simple. Very easy declaration. Just do this and live. And if we could just easily do this, we would live. That was the law's message. Faith's message is a different message, and it starts with this phrase, say not in thine heart. Now, that's interesting, because this say not in thine heart is actually out of two places in Deuteronomy. One of them is in chapter 8, verse 17, and the other is in chapter 9, verse 4. And the next quote, who shall ascend into heaven, is in chapter 30. So what does that tell you? It tells you that he is putting some stuff together. He says the righteousness that is out of faith has this message, and then he takes two passages. In the early part of Deuteronomy, and then 20 chapters later, he finds the very next thing that he wants to quote. So there are 20 chapters between these two where there is nothing. This is the line of demarcation right here. Say not in thine heart. And then he says, you shouldn't say in your heart, who shall ascend into heaven or who shall descend into the deep. But that's not at all what's going on in Deuteronomy 8 or 9. So I want us to go to Deuteronomy 8 and 9 and look at what's going on there, because of the fact that Paul is describing the message of faith, and he's doing it using Moses, who was the one who described the righteousness of the law. So it's not like Moses didn't know the righteousness of faith. But I want you to see right here, when you do a phrase search, when Paul quotes somewhere in the Old Testament, he said in verse 17, literally in the Septuagint, it's translated, and do not say in your heart. So if you were reading the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation, you would find Paul's exact words, the whole phrase, in this text. And then, if you were to go to chapter 9, verse 4, right here, Moses also writes, speak not in your heart. And this, again, in the Septuagint, is exactly the same phrase as Paul used. So, when there are two phrases that are exactly like the one Paul uses, and neither one of them are tied to the Deuteronomy 30 passage, you have to ask yourself, okay, why did he go all the way back to Deuteronomy 8 or 9 or both, and then just connect that to chapter 30? How can he do that? What's he doing? Well, to answer that question, we're going to start in chapter 8. Because, like I said, this phrase is exactly like Paul's phrase in Romans 10. He says, and say not in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. I want you to notice the context. In Deuteronomy 8:17, there are two issues. One of them is the fact of acquired wealth. He's talking here about the wealth that Israel has been able to accumulate because of God's dealings with them in the wilderness and bringing them into the good land. And he said that God led you through a great and terrible wilderness where there were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, and there was no water. And he brought you water out of the rock of flint, and he fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers didn't have a clue about. They never heard of manna. But he did that so that he could humble you, so that he could prove you, so that he could do you good at your latter end. And then he says, and do not say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gotten me this wealth, but remember that the Lord your God He is the one who gives you the power to get the wealth that he may establish his covenant. Now, the thing that I want you to be really clear on here is that in this text, the issue is the fact of wealth and the question of source. And the fact that Israel is liable to misstate the source. They didn't really have any problem with the fact that they had acquired this wealth. What they were in danger of doing was thinking that that was a direct result of their power instead of God's. This is the issue. Now, when we're talking in Romans 10 about the issue of faith and the law, you can see immediately a connection in Paul's thinking. The reason why he might have gone to chapter 8 of Deuteronomy, because the issue in Romans 10 is the one that wants to live by the law has to do it out of his own power. And if you're going to live by the righteousness of faith, you're going to operate on the power of God. So those are the two issues, and that may well have been why Paul used the phrase, if in fact he had chapter 8, verse 17 in mind. That "not" is actually in the Septuagint, so I'm putting it in there. Do not say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gotten me this. It was the Lord that gave it to you. Okay, so that's chapter 8, verse 17. And then when we go to chapter 9, verse 4, I want you to see the issue here. And I think this is probably the verse that Paul actually had in mind of the two because of the issue of righteousness that's involved here. But I want you to notice the two things that are in chapter 9, verse 4. The first one is the possession of the land. This is sort of like chapter 8's acquisition of wealth. But in the second issue of this verse, he says, do not say in your heart, after the Lord your God has cast them out from before you, do not say, for my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. Don't say that. It's because of the wickedness of those nations that the Lord has driven them out. Not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart do you go to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations. And then, verse 6, understand therefore that the Lord your God gives you not this good land to possess it for your righteousness, because you are a stiff-necked people. Okay? That's what he says to Israel. So, the point that I want to make here is, in chapter 8, the issue was the fact of the wealth and the command, do not say, by my power I got this. But in chapter 9, verse 4, the issue is the possession of the land. But it's not by my power. They're not tempted in verse 4 to say, it was my doing that did this. They're actually saying, do not say in your heart that the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. In other words, the source issue has been resolved in chapter 8, so that in chapter 9, that's not the issue. The question is why? In other words, the reason. And the warning is, you might think that you're being given this land because you're so good, and that the nations that are being driven out before you are being driven out because you deserve to have this wonderful land because you're so good. He said, don't say that. It is their wickedness that is causing them to lose it. It is not your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart. It's their wickedness that's causing this. And understand that, because God gives you this land, but it's not because you're righteous, it's because they're not. They're wicked, and he's driving them out because of their wickedness. Now, you can see immediately here a connection with Romans 10, because Paul is dealing with the issue of the attitude of, oh, it's because of my righteousness. It's because I've established myself as acceptable before God because I'm so good. I mean, that's what the issue is in chapter 10. They were ignorant of the righteousness of God, so they set about to establish their own. And their own is built off of the law, which says, do this and live. And they say, well, we're getting this land because we're good. And he says, don't say that. You're not. You're stiff-necked. This is what he told Israel. So, in these two passages, And I really believe it was chapter 9, verse 4 that Paul probably had in mind in chapter 10 of Romans, because the issue is righteousness in both contexts. The real issue in both these cases is the issue of self-righteousness. Now, when we compare these two texts together, we actually find that there are three issues that are involved. One of them is what they possess. In chapter 8, it was wealth, and in chapter 9, it's the land. So that's the what. And then, the issue of how it's possessed. In chapter 8, it's their own might. They're inclined to say, it's my power, my right hand. Or, it's God's power, one or the other. That's the how. And then, why? According to chapter 8, verse 18, it said that God did this. He made you wealthy to fulfill his covenant to the fathers. And notice right here, he says in verse 5 of chapter 9 of Deuteronomy, the Lord doth drive them out that he may perform the word which he sware unto your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In other words, he's not doing this because of you, your righteousness, your uprightness. He's doing this because he made a promise. Now remember what we're talking about. We're talking about the righteousness of faith. And the issue of faith is always going to be an issue of a commitment that God has made that has to do with life. And the question then is, what are you going to get? And that's life. How are you going to get it? Either by the law or by faith. And the question is, why? And the answer there is, because God made some promises back there that he's got to keep. So those are the issues in the precursor. Now that we've seen that, I want us to zero in on the statement that he says here in verse 4, that is in Romans 10, do not say in your heart. I want us to focus there because this is a real crucial issue. When we consider this exhortation, do not say in your heart, we're actually dealing with two things. One of them has to do with what you say in your heart. And that terminology points to the actual point of view that a person has taken, is taking, and will take on any given issue. What I mean by that is the heart is the core of where all this stuff comes from. That's why Proverbs says, guard your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. If a person says something in their heart, then this is their actual way of thinking. Now, this may not be what they say with their mouth, because sometimes the way people actually think, they don't want anybody to know. And so they just don't say what they really think. They say something that's acceptable. Or perhaps they say something that's totally unacceptable because they want to be a horse's rear end or whatever. But the point is, when Moses and Paul say, do not say in your heart, they're taking it out of the superficial conversation realm and they're sticking it right into the very core of the heart of the man, and that's the actual way that he's thinking. So when he says, do not say in your heart, he's saying, okay, bottom line theology. This is what we're dealing with. What do you really think? What do you really think? Okay? And he's telling them what not to really think. Do not say. This is the message of faith, remember? He said, the righteousness of faith speaks thus. Do not say in your heart. And then goes on with some things that you're not supposed to say. So the first thing that I wanted to point out is he's talking about what's going on in the subterranean areas, in the heart, their actual way of thinking. And he's talking about what they're saying down there where nobody but God and them knows. The second thing that he's dealing with is what are they not supposed to say? In the passage in Deuteronomy, they're not supposed to say, for my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. That's what they're not supposed to say. Now I want to talk a little bit about that in regard to Romans. I want you to look at what he actually writes here in Romans about what you're not supposed to say. He says, the righteousness which is of faith speaks on this wise, or says this, say not in your heart who. That's absolutely critical to the concept of faith. Faith's message starts in the heart. This is why it says, don't say this here. When it gets down to the bottom line, where you really think, this is where it is. It's in the heart. But what's its fundamental message? Do not say who. Why? Because faith's message is, God has made the commitment. Do you remember the principle in Romans 4 that finally Abraham learned? What did Abraham finally learn in Romans 4? He that made the promise is obliged to keep it. It's his job. Therefore, one of the fundamental issues of faith's message is you do not say who. Because the who's already here. God has made the commitment. For you to say who means you don't believe that God's going to do this. So somebody else has got to. You don't say that. Faith cannot challenge whether God's going to do what he says he's going to do. That's not faith. Faith's message is you don't say who. Because God's already made the commitment. And I want you to notice what the commitment is. We'll get back to this, Lord willing, next time. But what's he dealing with on the who? Who shall ascend into heaven to bring Christ down? What is that? That's incarnation. And who's going to ascend into the deep in order to bring Christ up from the dead? What is that? That's resurrection. So here we have the two biggies, incarnation and resurrection. Incarnation was so that the Son of God could identify with us as a human being, a second Adam, so that what he did, we could profit from, because he is one of us. Resurrection is the proof of the truth of it. Anybody can claim any kinds of stuff, but if you can be raised from the dead on the third day, then what you've claimed is true. So this is the proof of the truth. Now, in respect of Paul's argument in Romans 10, he says, faith says like this, do not say who is going to create this identification with us by the incarnation, and he's going to validate it by physical bodily resurrection from the dead. Don't say who. Faith says God. That's the first fundamental issue of faith's message. So when we say faith's message is, we have two elements. One of them is in the heart, and the other one is we do not say who in our hearts. Otherwise, we're not being believing. Bottom line theology, at the heart level, we don't say who, because God's already said me. I. And you remember back there in Deuteronomy 9? It was because he had made this covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He had made the promises. And therefore, it was his responsibility and his willingness to do them, so that anybody who said who was already challenging the integrity of the promises of God, and that's unbelief. So that's what we have to start with. Paul used the Deuteronomy 9:4 quote from Moses, even though it's not in the immediate context of the questions that are raised here by Moses, which are in Deuteronomy 30, even though they're not in close proximity to these, the real issue is the message of faith. And in the message of faith, the first fundamental is you don't say in your heart who. And then the issue is, well, let me say it this way. The Bible uses the term faith to identify this in our heart speech. Faith is not what we say with our lips. Faith is what we say in our hearts. Faith isn't what we subscribe to overtly in front of people. Faith is what is going on in the heart with either a conviction of God's truthfulness or doubt about it. And faith message is, in your heart, you don't say who, because faith is the term the Bible uses to identify this in your heart speech, and the what that's in the heart is either the truth of God, that's what the Bible calls faith. When the truth of God's in your heart and you subscribe to it, that's faith. When the truth of God is in your heart and you deny it, that's unbelief. So that's faith's message at this level. In the heart, and we don't say who. Now, in the issue of the what, because that's the next thing. When you say who, you're asking who is going to do what. And of course, as we've already pointed out, in this concept, or in this text, it's ascending into heaven or descending into the deep. That's the what. But let's think our way back through Deuteronomy 8 and 9, where this do not say in your heart thing came from. Because in those contexts, you remember, the what was wealth or possession of land, and the how in Deuteronomy 8 was by my power or by God's power. You have to decide. In your heart, you have to decide. Not what you say, but what you actually believe in your heart. You're going to do this or God's going to do this. Okay? And then in chapter 9, there wasn't any question. God gave us the land, but why? Well, then you got to decide, was it because we deserved it? We were so good and righteous and holy that he decided to do this as a favor or reward? Or did he just grace us with this land because the people in it were so wicked that he was going to remove them? And so he just gave it to us. Not because we were righteous or upright, but because they had run out of time. In fact, he even didn't send them straight to the land from Egypt, but went down by Sinai and all that, and wandered around for 2 years before they got to Kadesh Barnea. But the text says that he did that because the wickedness of the Amorite wasn't full yet. There was still a little bit left that needed to be finished up. But when they got to that kickover point, and it was full, God said, you're out of here. And so he brought Israel in to kill them. He said, kill them all. Because the level of their wickedness has reached its absolute maximum. We're not going to tolerate any more of this. Kill them all. So, when we're talking about the righteousness which is of faith, we're dealing with who, what, and why. Now, when Paul used these later statements here in verse 30, or chapter 30 of Deuteronomy, who shall ascend into heaven, who shall descend into the deep, we're going to get into those next week, because what is going on in Deuteronomy is, Moses says to the people, don't say in your heart, no, he doesn't say that. He says, this commandment which I'm giving to you today, don't say who's going to go into heaven and get it for us, because it's right here. And don't say who's going to go across the sea to get it for us, because it's right here. See, that's verse 8. This is in Deuteronomy 30 also. The word is near you, in your mouth, in your heart. So, the who's going to go get it, who's going to go across the sea to get it, those are nonsense questions, because it's right here. But I point this up because the particulars of the how and the why questions are different from Moses in Deuteronomy to Paul in Romans 10, but the principle of faith is the same. You don't approach faith at the superficial level. Faith is a heart issue. And you don't challenge the integrity of what God has said if you're believing him. You don't say who. Now, I want to deal with that in relation to what actually happened to Israel, because Israel was told, don't say in your heart, but they didn't obey that. You know, when Moses gave them a command, that didn't automatically mean they were going to do it. What was said in the heart was totally dependent on the condition of the heart. An exhortation does not assume compliance. Just because Moses laid down the law doesn't mean that the people paid him any attention at all. When he said to them, do not say in your heart, that didn't mean they weren't going to. And what was Moses' theology in relation to the issue of their righteousness and their privilege? This land is our land because we have been faithful. This is exactly the theology of first century Israel. We're going to go into the kingdom of God because we're law keepers. I thank you, God, that I'm not like all those lawless people. I keep the law. I do everything I'm supposed to do. That's the attitude of Israel. That's the equivalent of saying, I'm here because I've behaved myself. What that means is that they frankly disobeyed Moses. They said in their hearts, this land is ours because we deserve it. That's what they said in their hearts. Now, what happened? Let's go to Deuteronomy 30 and see what happened. Deuteronomy 30, verse 1 starts with a prophecy. It shall come to pass when all these things, chapters 28, 29, when all these things are come upon you, the blessing and the curse, which I've set before you, and you shall call them to mind among all the nations, whither the Lord your God has driven you. Now, this is the key issue. Why did they get the land? Because God had driven the Amorites out. All right? The prophecy here is, God's going to drive you out too. Why? Well, you remember chapter 9? You're a stiff-necked people. I told you not to say in your heart, and you said it anyway. Well, what happens when you disobey something like that? It comes back to haunt you. So, in the prophecy of Deuteronomy 30, he actually says, hey, what happened to the Amorites is going to happen to you too. And did it? Well, sure it did. Israel displaced the Amorites at the time of the Exodus. The Canaanites, okay? But Assyria, in 720 B.C., displaced the 10 tribes of the northern part of Israel, and Babylon in 605, they came in and they displaced Judah, hauled them off into captivity. So the very thing that had happened to the Canaanites by God's use of Israel, because the Canaanites were wicked, happened to Israel and Judah because they became wicked. Why? Because they refused to say in their hearts the right thing. They were not supposed to say in their hearts, we deserve this, but they said it anyway. So, it came back to haunt them. Well, what that means is that whether a person says the right thing in his heart or not depends entirely on the heart. And what makes the difference? You remember Romans chapter 2 at the end of the chapter? He said, circumcision is of the heart. And why did the heart need to be circumcised? Well, because in Romans chapter 2, about verse 4 or 5, somewhere along in there, it said, because of the hardness of your impenitent heart, you are stacking up wrath for yourself in the day of wrath. That meant the hardness was a shell around the heart, which was not going to allow anything to penetrate the heart. It was going to hold what was in there in there. Well, if the heart is going to hold what's in there and not allow anything from the outside to get in, what's going to happen when they're told the truth and commanded to do this or that or whatever? Do not say in your heart. Well, that truth hits this hard case outer part of the heart and bounces off. So what do they say in their heart? What's already in there? The self-righteous, self-justifying. So God's solution to that is to cut all that hardness off. That's the circumcision of the heart. Well, once the heart is circumcised, then the soft outer shell can be penetrated by the truth. And this is the first step in bringing a person into the faith. Faith requires that the heart be altered sufficiently that the hardness can't keep the truth from penetrating. That's required. Faith requires it. That's what Paul said in Romans chapter 2. So when we look at Moses telling the children of Israel, don't say in your heart, and they turn right around and say it anyway, and then in Deuteronomy 30, he comes back and says, okay, because you're that way, the same thing's going to happen to you that happened to the Canaanites. But when it's all said and done, when it all comes to pass, and this stuff has happened, when it's all said and done, God's going to speak to you again, and you'll return. And notice what's going to happen. Notice what happens in Deuteronomy 30, verse 6. The Lord your God will circumcise your heart. And when he does, you'll be able to love him with your heart, soul, and you will be able to live. And the Lord your God will put all these curses on your enemies and on them that hate you, who persecute you, and you'll return and obey the voice. And that's the outworking of the circumcision. So when he says what he does in Romans 10, this is a commandment I command you this day. It's not hidden from you. It's not far off. It's not in heaven that you should say, who shall go up for us to heaven? It's not beyond the sea that you should say, who will go across the sea and bring it to us? The word is very near unto you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may do it. This is Romans 10, but it's coming right out of Deuteronomy 30, but it's based on the alteration of the condition of the heart, where God circumcises the heart, the truth is able to penetrate it. So now, believers have the ability that they never had. Nobody else has this ability. The message of faith is, your heart has been circumcised. It has been softened by God. Now the truth of God can and has penetrated it. And therefore, when the message of faith is, do not say in your heart who, you can actually obey this. Because your heart's been circumcised, the Spirit of God dwells in you, the truth of God is in your heart, and so now when you're faced with a crisis issue, you do not say who, because God's already made the commitment. God is the one who's made the commitments, and so we can actually obey him. Israel clearly disobeyed Moses, but Paul expected his readers to not disobey. So when Paul exhorted the Romans, do not say in your heart who, he was actually doing that on the basis of chapter 2, circumcision's already happened. The truth has come in, the love of God has been shed abroad in your heart, chapter 5. So by God's activity on our behalf, we have the ability to face the circumstances of our days without saying who. Now what's the biggest problem with that? The what? This is the biggest problem we have. Trying to decide, what has God said that addresses my situation right now? It's not a matter of who, it's a matter of what. What did he say? The reason why, for example, we struggle with so many things we struggle with is because we don't have a definitive word about so many of the things that we face. So what do? In the absence of a definitive word? Well, we're going to have to go to the basic bottom line issues. It really doesn't matter if I say we have no definitive word regarding a particular. Let me see if I can. Well, since it's heavy on all of our hearts anyway, we'll just use all of these cancer situations that we face with people that we know and care about, okay? What has God said about healing people with cancer? Nothing. Now, that means we have no definitive word in relation to that particular. So what are we supposed to do? Well, we're going to have to fall back to the basics. What has God said about our circumstances at the physical level, whether it's cancer or any other physical malady? What's the bottom line promise concerning physical realities in the scriptures? Come on, you guys have... Okay, we're going to get the resurrection, and we're going to suffer. But Hazel's gotten back to the basic category. My grace will be sufficient for you. That's the promise for the physical situation that we face. When Paul had the thorn in the flesh, he asked God three times to remove it. God said, my grace will be sufficient for you. That's the basic promise that the scriptures give for the body. So we don't go around expecting what he has not said, but we do go around expecting what he has said. And he said, I'll give you enough grace. So that's what you look for. When we went back to Lake Charles for Hazel's brother's funeral, his wife was devastated. I mean, we got there the day after it happened, and she was in tears, and she kept saying, I didn't know. And I said, it wouldn't have mattered if you did know. There was nothing you could do. But I said, one thing you can do, you can say, God, I've got to have grace for this. And she said, that's what I've been saying. I can't handle this. I've got to have grace. And every time I saw her in those next couple of days, my word to her was grace and more grace. That's the promise. Now, in her situation, it wasn't physical things. It was the relationship and all that. But in the final analysis, this is where it's going to come down at the basic level. When we have to deal with particulars that we don't have a definitive word on, we're going to have to go back to the basics. And the basics are grace for the physical things. I will never leave you nor forsake you for the relational things. And I love you for the spiritual stuff. So body, soul, and spirit, we have a fundamental basic commitment by God. And we do not say, who loves me? We don't say, who's going to be with me in this? We don't say, who's going to give me grace enough to supply this? We already know who. God made those commitments, and he's going to keep them, if we trust him. Now, if we're not looking for it, it ain't going to happen for us. Except, God doesn't abandon us even when we don't believe him. But when we don't believe him, it makes life a whole lot worse, because we're not looking for the very solutions that we have to have. But when we're looking for them, we get them. Because he said he would. And faith messages don't say, who's going to supply this for me? Because God's already said. And the what is not in the particulars. It's in the basic. I know it's easy for us to say when we're perfectly healthy that grace is enough. But folks, grace is enough. So if you're not healthy, so if you've got some terrible something wrong with you, grace is enough. And you can have life because grace is enough. So that's the issue in Romans 10. Paul starts off by dealing with the righteousness which is of the law. And he says that principle is very basic. Just do it and you'll live. But what happens when you run into the reality that you can't do it? The issue of the righteousness of faith is somebody else will do it. You just got to trust. So the who question is answered. God. And faith says, believing. Don't say who. Any comments or questions before we quit? We are made up of three parts. We have a body. We dwell in a body. We are a soul and we have a spirit. These issues are, this is the pain-pleasure issue, and the promise that God makes for the body when it starts breaking down is sufficient grace. My grace will be sufficient. At the soul level, the real issue for the soul is security, and the problem or the mechanism of security is almost always relationships. So the promise for the soul is, I will never leave you. Hebrews 13 says, because he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you, what have I to fear? And then at the spirit level, the spirit's all wrapped up in this status stuff. The spirit wants to make a significant contribution. And in that area, the issue is, am I important? And the answer from God is, you think I'd have sent Jesus to die for you if you weren't. God's answer here is, I love you. That makes you important. Okay. Any other comment or question? God really has made the Christian life a matter of a relative simplicity if you understand the basics and you're willing to fall back on it. The complexity is when we lose sight of that. We get sidetracked, you know, get our eyes on the other stuff. But if we go back to these three basic issues and the promises God makes, life smooths out pretty fast. Body may not get well. Relationships on the physical level, human level, may not improve. People may insult us and, you know, make us try to make us feel like we're a nobody and nothing. But God's already addressed all three of those things. Doesn't matter what people do. Okay, well, let's have a word of prayer and we can stand around and visit and enjoy one another's fellowship for a little while. Father, when we look into your word constantly, you are exhorting us to say in our hearts what's really true. And you caution us against the unbelieving attitude of challenging what you've committed yourself to do for us. And we're glad that you have revealed these things in words so that we have opportunity to spend some time thinking about them and talking to you about them and talking to one another about them and discovering that there's real truth here and you do keep your word. So we pray that you'll enhance our ability to focus on these things that are real so that we will not say in our hearts, who's going to do this? We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.